Welcome to Building Fortunes Radio. Make sure you check us out at buildingfortunesradio.com. Along with our marketing partners, we're here to help our PM Marketing Network Lead customers build their businesses and make the world a better place. At Building Fortunes, we know how much your business means to you and the people important to you. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world. Now on to our show with your host, Peter Mingles.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. It's a Saturday night. It's 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. on the Central side. And it is, believe it or not, I guess, what is today? September 2nd. I can't believe it. It is September 2nd, and we are coming up to Labor Day on Monday. And this is kind of like a memorable part, you know, like how your cell phone shows you memories from like, whatever, 10 years ago or 7 years ago. It would be showing us memories of radio shows that we did with a gentleman named Roger Van Vlissingen and a business partner of his in cohorts. His name was E. Robert Smith. They were doing, I asked them to do some radio shows for us on Building Fortunes Radio about anti-MLM stuff. So on Building Fortunes Radio, I always say that, you know, MLM when done right is really good, and MLM when done wrong is, yeah, probably it's just like everything else when done wrong. It needs to be fixed, or it needs to be at least identified, so when it's done right, you know it, and when it's done wrong, you know it. Well, I asked Roger to be on our radio show. He brought a friend, and we talked around 7 or 8 years ago at this time because they were writing for SeekingAlpha.com, which is a website that deals with publicly traded companies. And Herbalife at the time was being, I'm going to use the term, attacked by Bill Ackman, a billionaire hedge fund manager who was betting on that stock to go down to zero because he was going to identify Herbalife as being a fraudulent pyramid scheme. And he did a ton of research on that sort of stuff. So Roger was writing about it. I said, you know, you're a smart guy. A lot of people that are anti-MLM people are not knowledgeable about the industry, but Roger was. So we did a radio show, and then I got a phone call on Labor Day. That's why it's kind of like our anniversary, if you will. And this was 7 or 8 years ago, and that phone call was from Scott Johnson. And Scott said, listen, I heard those radio shows, but there's one thing that everyone is missing in the MLM, you know, world when it comes to this sort of thing, and it's the tools scam. And I did not ever speak to Scott before, and we were having a pleasant conversation, and I did not know specifically if what he meant by the tool scam was what I was thinking about the tool scam. See, I was a distributor of Amway three separate times, and I was looking for a way to transition out of the direct sales career that I was in, and I was looking for, I needed to make at least $200,000 a year to be able to maintain my lifestyle, because that's the level that I was at in direct sales and direct sales management. And I was looking, trying to figure out how in the world you do that with Amway's compensation plan. I couldn't figure it out, so when I joined the first time, I quit. I said, you know, I don't know. Then I joined the second time because I figured, well, let me give it another shot. I really didn't research it as much as I should have, and so maybe I'll get a different perspective. And really all they wanted me to do is come to these meetings and functions, and they were kind of like a cult, a little bit more like a religion that said, you know, 99% loyal to the system is 100% disloyal to the system, and all weird things like that. And if it's in our catalog, you have to buy it. And they kept on pushing these tapes, these audio cassettes, and asking me to go at a meeting once or twice a week and a big regional thing. And I'm like, you know, this has nothing, these regional meetings. And they always made it super duper important. Like, the next one you go to is going to be where you're going to get your breakthrough. I'm like, I don't need a breakthrough. I just need to know how to do this sort of stuff. I already know how to recruit people. I just need to know, you know, the products and how you sell them and how the compensation plan works and how do you build this kind of a business. And anyway, so Scott Johnson said to me when I asked, do you have a website? He said, I sure do. It's stoptheamwaytoolscam.wordpress.com. That's when I realized that he was thinking about or talking about the same thing that I was thinking about with the tool scam. So we started to do this radio show, I guess, the next weekend, right after Labor Day. That's why it's kind of like anniversary time for Scott and I. And as a result of that, I said to Scott, I don't know how much we're going to be able to talk about tools. Like, you know, we'll talk about it, you know, different in various ways. But what happened was I didn't realize Scott was as knowledgeable as he was on the industry. So the industry gives us plenty of things to think about every single – or talk about every single week, and we do. So sometimes we talk about whatever's going on. Sometimes we talk about different things because Scott might have a guest. Sometimes we have other types of guests related to the MLM industry. We've spoken about everything from the economy to politics to child sex trafficking. We throw Mike Lindell and the MyPillow guy in there for election fraud, you know, a good old Donald Trump. And we've spoken about people that are, you know, the good anti-MLM people, the gurus, and the fraudulent, if you will, fake, delusional, who get their asses sued off, MLM YouTubers who kind of do a disservice to a lot of people in the industry because they're so freaking stupid. But anyway, so having said all of that sort of stuff, we've been doing this radio show ever since, and sometimes we have a guest, but tonight we don't. So Scott and I are just going to talk about a couple of things that are happening in the industry that are certainly worthwhile. But the first thing I want to do is I want to say thanks, Scott, for being here on our own radio show.
Hey, Peter, thanks for having me. Yeah, we're just going to wing it tonight like we do when we don't have guests. But we do have plenty to talk about. And it's funny that you talked about selling Amway products because they don't know how to do it because they don't do it. You know, I mean, there's exceptions to everything. But, you know, especially when we were in, you know, back in the 90s, they didn't sell products. That was almost a joke. You know, they kind of mentioned it every once in a while, but, you know, nobody harped on it. Nobody taught how to sell products. It was just not even a topic except in passing, you know, very, very briefly. And it was not emphasized in any way that you can imagine. So, yeah, it's just kind of funny that you were looking to try to find out how to sell the products, and that's not where they are. Now, they're beginning to come around only because the FTC is kind of forcing their hand a little bit recently, but we don't know, you know, if the FTC is going to keep up the pressure and whether they're actually going to take action. You know, that's always been my thing is I don't think the FTC misunderstands what's going on and the problems. They just talk about it and they don't do anything, or they do very little. They go after a company here and there, you know, every year or two, they might go after a company. But when there's over 600 or 700 MLMs in the United States, that's not even making a ripple on the water, right? I mean, it's so meaningless. I think they expect everybody to straighten out once they go after, you know, one or two companies every couple years. And it's just not getting attention. So, and last week, you know, we talked about the Amway income disclosure, brand new disclosure from last year, 2022, and how it's really a lot different than any previous disclosure I've ever seen. And just like most disclosures, probably every disclosure I've ever looked at, you know, and we've talked about this before, but there's, you know, three areas that I think those disclosures fall down. Number one, they don't talk about how hard somebody worked, you know, how many hours, for example, or how long they've been in. And they also don't talk about what the costs are to run the business, you know, to buy the tools and so forth. And so those are the things that, you know, I just think that the income disclosure documents just fall short. They just don't really have anything that's meaningful for somebody. Now, most of them are not very, what would you call it, favorable to the MLM. When you look at it, you go, well, that doesn't look very good. Only a very small percentage of people, you know, are succeeding at this. But of course, they overcome that by saying, look, you know, it takes time. Not everybody is a millionaire day one, which is true. But they don't talk about that structurally without the retail sales to customers who are not part of the MLM compensation plan, you are running an illegal pyramid. That is an illegal pyramid. And the FTC has been very clear on that point. But again, the FTC does a lot of talking and not much action. So we're awaiting action. I guess that's the mantra as far as the FTC goes. And like you mentioned, the tools, we like to cover this towards the beginning of every show because there's new listeners and they go, well, what do you mean by tools? You know, is it screwdrivers, hammers? No, tools are things. It, particularly in the Amway, and there's other MLMs that have tools. I don't think there's any MLM where either the company or the upline make as much money from the tools as Amway. But we're talking about, you know, tickets for meetings, books, recordings, phone apps, website access, voicemail. There's just all kinds of places where money is charged. And to me, the content is decent. Not that I agree with everything that anybody says, but, you know, to me, the content is not bad. It's just the fact that they lie by omission that that's where most of their money comes from. And I'm talking about the top layer of Amway distributors, which are called IBOs now, independent business owners, especially the top 1%. They make multiple times more, you know, 5 to 10 times or more from the tools than they do from the Amway business itself. But you would never know that listening to them because they don't bring it up. They put on airs as if all of their success came from Amway and the products and all of that. So I see that as RICO fraud. I'm not a lawyer, but it's at least business fraud, because when you leave out a major factor in the business model, that's fraudulent. You know, you're asking someone to join your business and you're telling them how it works, but you're leaving out where you make most of your money. And if that's not an obvious fraudulent activity, I don't know what it is. It's, you know, it's just so obvious to me. And I had been studying this a while. So, you know, it's one of those things where it might be obvious to me, but it may not be obvious to a new person. but once you know about it, I think you would have to agree that that's a fraud. So anyway, that's the tool scam. The other big problem in MLM, because not all MLMs have tool scams. I think a lot of them do not. And some of them even have rules, and they actually enforce the rules against tool scams. And by the way, what makes a tool scam a tool scam is not the amount of money. It's the fact that they're leaving out. That's where they make most of their money. That's what makes it a scam. I don't have any problem with somebody making money. You know, I'm a free enterprise capitalist type person. And if you want to make money, have at it. But you have to do it legally. And that's not happening. So hopefully the FTC is starting to wake up a little bit and they're going to start taking some action. But anyway, the other big problem is the lack of retail sales. Like I mentioned earlier, these are sales to people who are customers. They're not part of the MLM compensation plan, right? They're not IBOs. They're not distributors. They're just customers. They have no other interest in buying the product than for what the product is worth. There's no, you know, future promise or sort of attraction that you can make money at this down the road. It's just a customer. That's the end of the whole deal, you know, exchanging the money for the product or service. So that is very lacking in most MLMs. The only MLMs that I found may, and I would say even probably, and I wouldn't say a definitive statement unless I could see more information, right, more data. But the insurance MLMs appear to be having lots of retail sales. They appear to have plenty of retail sales, and there's no minimum requirement. That's unfortunate, I think. But when the FTC settled with Vima and Herbalife, which were ongoing concerns about 8 years ago when we started this show, the FTC was investigating them. And then a year later, in 2016, they settled out of court with both of them. And by and large, I'm kind of generalizing here a little bit because it's a little bit more complicated than what I'm about to say. But generally, the FTC's position in both of those settlements, and the MLMs accepted this because it was a settlement. They both agreed that as long as you have at least as much product or service, if it's a service MLM, going to customers as you do your own personal internal consumption, and that applies to every single distributor, and we know not every single distributor is going to, you know, do that, because you can have any kind of a requirement or a goal, and you know that 100% of the people will not need it. But let's say 80%, and let's say they do more than half, maybe it's 75%. Instead of 50%, then you can still get to that overall company 50% figure to show that there's free market demand for the products, which is required, or else, again, you have an illegal pyramid. You have essentially, in the olden days, the chain letter and the airplane game and the the more recent incarnation, the gifting schemes, all of these things that are product-less, you know, no product, pure play illegal pyramids, and they're clearly illegal. There's no question about that. But an MLM is the same sort of business model when there's not enough retail sales, with products kind of covering up what's going on, right? Kind of a camouflage effect. We have products, we can't be an illegal pyramid. Well, the FTC has put several MLMs out of business that have products for not having enough retail sales. So I'm hoping that the FTC in the future, as I recommended to them this past May 2022, over a year ago, they go ahead and put out an edict that says you got to have at least 50% of your overall sales going to customers. That's a very simple, straightforward requirement that should not have any reason to be pushed back on. And it could be higher. I mean, you could say, hey, you got to have 75 or 100 or, you know, 200% retail sales compared to what I call internal consumption. That's what the distributors purchase. But I think we can start out at 50-50. That's something that, again, I don't think it can be argued that that's too much retail sales. After all, we have, what, 8 billion people on the planet? I think you could find enough to mimic your own personal household consumption or more. You know, that's a minimum, so it could be more. So anyway, that's the two big things. And by the way, I was just checking. I was just checking one of our favorite anti-MLM huns, whose show is coming up tonight, and he's interviewing one of our favorite guys, Kevin Thompson. So now we have two brainiacs talking to each other, and I put brainiacs in quotes, of course, on this guy's show tonight. So it should be a hoot. And the reason I bring that up is because several years ago, I was talking to Kevin Thompson. I said, hey, you know, there should be this 50% requirement. You know, it's silly not to have it. It's very straightforward, very simple, very defendable, and all those kinds of things. And typical lawyer, right, Kevin Thompson, he's a lawyer, he says, well, Scott, what you mean that if one MLM had 50.0% retail sales, they would be a perfectly acceptable MLM, but MLM number two, if they had 49.9% retail sales, they would be a complete scam? You know, a typical lawyer logic of trying to pin you down, you know, to try to make a point, which of course is pointless, because it's really like any other law where there's a limit, like a speed limit, right? Let's say you have a speed limit of 35 miles an hour. Well, is a policeman going to pull you over to the side if you're doing 36? In some places they do. Most places they don't. And so I'm sure the FTC would have a little bit of leeway if you were doing 49.9, because there's plenty of, you know, what we call a target-rich environment, right? There's a target-rich environment of MLMs doing much, much, much less than 49.9, and so that argument just completely falls apart. But he was trying to, you know, basically trap me by logic, like lawyers often do, without seeing the overall benefit of having retail sales. And instead of defending the logic of having retail sales, he tried to nitpick. And anyway, it should be a real good show tonight, and I put good in quotation marks too, that we'll be able to enjoy at some later time. So anyway, Peter, I just had to mention that real quick in passing, and I'll let you make any comments, and then we can get into what we're going to talk about tonight.
In reference to that show, I'm guessing that means he's just going to talk about him as opposed to talk with him on a podcast or radio show or YouTube thing?
I think so. I think he's okay. Just going to talk about him, yes.
Okay. So for those people unfamiliar with MLM, there were many more attorneys that most people might know as a distributor There was Jeffrey Babner, who affectionately kicked the ass of William Keep, Professor William Keep. You got to see that one. It's one of my favorites to watch. If you ever get a little bit, you need to have faith in lawyers and their ability to slay FTC witnesses or supposed witnesses. You got to watch that one. So if you look for Jeffrey Babner and William Keep, you could see that one. So there was one. There was another
That was a trial too. That's a live trial. Okay, this isn't just a debate. This is under oath, asking questions, giving answers. It is really good. Yep.
And
sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
It is a classic. It is a classic. So Jeffrey Babner, who is deceased at this point, really took him to task and made him look like an idiot. And he hasn't grown much since then. The other attorneys were like Grimes and Reese. Kevin Grimes and Spencer Reese had they were basically big ones at the time. Kevin Grimes was the one who represented Mel Luke. A lot of people know him from there. There's Scott Warren from Warren and W&W Law. There was David Eisenstein. And the reason why I know all these people is because I was president of the Distributor Rights Association and the ANMP. So I had the opportunity, they were on our legal panels many times, so I got a chance to meet them personally as well. All good guys, very super duper smart. By the way, I haven't mentioned Kevin Thompson yet. I have not mentioned Kevin Thompson yet. And then there was, who else was there? Jerry Neera, who was a gentleman who was with ProStep as far as one of his clients. And we actually, me specifically and my smart networker group, we actually went against Jerry Neera and Kevin Lehman from ProStep. So we won. So there's the distributor suing a network marketing company, and we won. Jerry Neera was the opposing, if you will, attorney. Then there was a few other ones. But Kevin Thompson kind of came up as the new guy with all these older guys and more experience, and what he was doing. If you couldn't afford, like, Jeffrey Babner, and you couldn't afford Spencer or Kevin Grimes, and you couldn't afford Scott Warren, you afforded the guy that would be the low-cost bidder, which was Kevin Thompson. So, I guess if I were a brand-new attorney trying to break into the industry as well, you know, probably have to start somewhere, so you'd probably be the low-cost bidder. And he would do a lot of work. The problem was he was also, besides being a low-cost bidder, he was a low-quality attorney. I really didn't know what he was doing. I remember Len Clements, who you have not heard from for a while, who I spoke to recently. He may be coming back. But Len Clements and I, when we were part of the Distributor Rights Association, we interviewed Kevin Thompson because as a new attorney, he was trying to take the legislature or the state of Tennessee, I think it was, to try to set some precedents for MLM. And we kind of said, what the hell are you doing? You don't know what you're doing. You're going to tear this industry apart. Like, don't do us any favors. Like, learn the industry first. And Kevin Thompson was someone who was the attorney for walking across the stage with Empower Network, David Wood and David Sharp, and all that sort of stuff, which was an obvious scam. But he was their attorney on the, you know, holding up the big checks and stuff like that, speaking at their conventions. And what a lot of the older, more seasoned, more knowledgeable attorneys were saying is, listen, this guy's trying to make a name for himself on social media, and he's making himself look like an idiot. And he's, oh, man, he made so many mistakes. And he got his ass kicked many times. And one of the things that I totally lost respect for him initially, and eventually gained a little bit of respect, because you can't suck. I got to say it like this. You can't suck forever. Like, you got to get incrementally better. So he is incrementally better than what he was way back then. But I'll never forget, and he put this on a video when he was talking about Paul Burks and Zeke Rewards, when Paul Burks closed the business down and pleaded, closed the business down. Kevin Thompson said, oh, that means he's guilty, or he must be guilty, otherwise he would have never done that. It's kind of like somebody that basically, when like I said, I'll repeat myself, there was lots of reasons why Paul Burke shut down the business and did not admit guilt, but an attorney said, oh, he shut down the business, which means he's guilty. For an attorney to say something like that, that's just unheard of. And it was on a video, and I should have recorded it or should have downloaded it, but he's deleted that since then. So you won't find a lot of the gems of Kevin Thompson that really are worth putting him down on. And he's probably one of the fewer, if you will, attorneys that are out there. And there's one reason, I'm going to tell you. Well, there's two reasons why Kevin Thompson got better, in my opinion. Number one, he got his ass kicked so many times by so many different people and or companies. By being under fire, he had no other choice. Second, when Kevin Grimes was sued by the receiver with Zeke Rewards for $100 million, when the attorney was sued by the receiver, Kevin Grimes was also selling a compliance course. And Spencer Reese, his partner, I don't know if he didn't know about it, but I'm going to say he probably didn't know about it. But because of Kevin Grimes being associated with Zeke Rewards and having the compliance course and all that other sort of stuff, Grimes and Reese got a divorce. And Grimes, because he was being sued by the receiver for $100 million, was kind of like untouchable by a lot of companies. So he wound up taking some time off, wound up settling with the receiver for far less than $100 million, and wound up actually doing some behind-the-scenes work for Kevin Thompson, which means my second reason why Kevin Thompson is better is because Kevin Grimes is probably mentoring and coaching Kevin Thompson along the way. So Kevin Grimes is a great man, number one. He's done amazing things as a man. Number two, he's a good attorney. Number three, if we had Kevin Grimes here, he would say the Zeke Rewards people didn't follow my recommendations, which sometimes happens when it comes to attorneys and companies. So that's Kevin's version of that story. But Kevin Grimes kind of got a bad rap from the receiver and the industry when he was taken out. But Kevin Grimes, a great guy, knows the industry better than anybody else on the planet, and he's very knowledgeable. But the reason why Kevin Thompson is a better attorney today is because of Kevin Grimes, which many people don't know this sort of stuff because Kevin Grimes is many times behind the scenes in a lot of the stuff that's going on. So just seasoning, if you will, he's gotten older, meaning Kevin Thompson. He's gotten his ass kicked so many different times. You can't suck at anything for so long, so he's had to get better. And he's got a lot of really practical experience with Kevin Grimes as well. So I just wanted to throw that in there. And I, based on what I just said, it would be impossible for Kevin Thompson to be live on a radio show with that goofball. It would be either impossible or the guy hit his head and is suffering a concussion and a lapse of judgment. And I don't think that's the case. So I'd say probably the goofball is probably going to make a whole bunch of stupid statements like he usually does based on no information that I just said. and it's going to be hysterical because we're used to him talking about shit that he doesn't know about, thinking that he's a guru. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, it should be quite entertaining for sure. Yep. And I know a little bit about Kevin Thompson as well, particularly, you know, way back, because he's told and talked about this in the past. So Kevin Thompson used to actually be in Amway. I think he was in college at the time, and you know, the excess energy drink was a big thing, and so he was really into that. And he's also a collegiate athlete, and so, you know, those things probably helped him make some money at the excess energy, maybe even selling it, for all I know. All I know is that most people didn't sell excess energy or anything else when it comes to Amway. But apparently he, you know, liked it, maybe sold it. I don't know. But then he ended up getting a law degree, of course. And I don't know exactly which group he was in. I think he was in Orrin Woodward's group. And Orrin Woodward is infamous for being kicked out of Amway in 2007. And Kevin Thompson was his lead attorney. I think he was even running Orrin's tool scam company at the time. But then he started to represent Orrin Woodward in their lawsuits that went back and forth between Amway. And so he was the lead attorney. Like you say, someone's getting his butt kicked over and over again. That was one of many. And Amway definitely kicked all of their butts collectively. And then he, you know, went off and started, like, as you said, to become a quote unquote MLM expert. But he's nothing that I would consider an expert, not at all. And I've had conversations with him off and on over the years. And some of them were actually kind of productive, and some of them, like I mentioned before, just crazy talk as far as this 49.9%, 50%. It's just crazy talk in my mind. But anyway, I also called him, Kevin Thompson, when Amway sued me back in 2010. And I said, hey, Kevin, because he's in Tennessee, I'm in Texas, do you know any lawyer in the Dallas area, which is where I lived at the time, who could represent me? You know, someone that knows MLM and you know, could represent me against Amway's lawsuit. And he said, oh, I have a great guy. This guy is in Dallas, or the Dallas area. He was actually an Amway IBO. I think he told me he was an IBO. But anyway, he said that he represented some of the Dallas area IBOs when Orrin Woodward was suing Amway, because part of Orrin's strategy when that happened was that he would have lawsuits all over the country, all suing Amway. And so he was trying to, you know, just sort of make a big cloud of dust, so to speak, to make Amway bend to his desires, which utterly failed, of course. But anyway, he said, oh, yeah, this guy's a great lawyer, and he really knows MLM. He'd be perfect for you. I said, okay, well, what's his name? He says, Charles Bundren. And I said, huh, well, that's interesting, Kevin, because I just finished reading this lawsuit from Amway, this half-page thick lawsuit, all this legalese, and guess whose name is at the very bottom of the lawsuit? It's Charles Bundren. So Charles flipped sides. You know, he went from suing Amway to representing Amway against me, and so that was not a good candidate. So I don't think Kevin had any other good ideas, except for he said, you know, you ought just fold. Don't even fight back. Don't even just fold. Don't even try to do anything, because all you're going to do is spend a minimum of $50,000, and you know, it's just not going to go anywhere. Well, I don't have that nature of just giving up, you know, especially immediately. And so eventually I did settle with Amway out of court and came away with a fantastic settlement, which is on my websites, and I'll give you the way to find my websites in a second. And there's no other conclusion you can come to other than I won in the settlement. Amway got some extremely minor concessions from me, which really don't amount to a hill of beans, but that's where we ended up with that lawsuit. I tried to countersue, but the judge said, well, if you countersue, you got to go into Amway's arbitration process, which I know is fraudulent, and I didn't want to go there. And in fact, Charles Bundren offered that to me several times during these hearings that we had before, you know, the trial, which never happened because we settled. And every time he offered that, I said no, because I knew I didn't want to go there. So anyway, if you go to facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson, ScottTexJohnson, all one word, you'll find links to my three websites where you can find that settlement, the link to this radio show, my YouTube, my email, all kinds of information. You know, feel free to email me with any questions or comments. I'm always happy to entertain those kinds of things. But anyway, that's my experience with Kevin Thompson, my personal experience, and my personal knowledge of him and his relationship with Amway years ago. You know, this is back in the late 90s and early 2000s. So, but I'm with you, Peter. I'm not impressed. The guy really doesn't have a very good brain as far as I'm concerned. I guess that's that. Do you want to make any other comments, or shall we move on?
I'll just say him as a lawyer is probably questionable about best. He seems like a nice guy, like a family man and a hard worker and cares about his people and all that sort of stuff. So it looks like he's a good guy, but meaning like a person. But I don't know, as far as an attorney, my cousin Vinny is just a little bit below Kevin Thompson. You know, so the reality is that I think, you know, Kevin Thompson is someone who still has a lot of growing to do. Now, having said that, it's going to be very interesting to see the conclusions of someone commenting about this attorney who has no knowledge of any of the things that we just said, Scott. So somebody with no knowledge about this guy is going to talk about this guy, which is going to be kind of funny and very typical. So having said that, we'll just continue with our always stupid comments about that one gentleman. So I won't even use his name. So having said that, there's a lot of really good things to talk about today on the radio show, so I'll let you get to it, and I'll cover up some stuff as well. I'll get into that, because some of this is going to bring Kevin Thompson back into it for sure. So back to you.
Yeah, one of the things I mentioned last week and I wanted to kind of cover tonight is this presentation, or this, I guess, remarks to the DSA last October of 2022. And it's remarks from Samuel Levine, I don't know how he pronounces his last name, and he's the director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection at the Federal Trade Commission. So pretty high monkey muck. He's not a commissioner, but he's probably reports directly to the commissioners. So he is very high in the food chain in the FTC. And this is last September 22nd, 2022. And I'm almost tempted to read the entire I guess it's about 8 pages, but I think that would be a little too much. So I'm just going to try to review this very briefly and quickly and make my comments along the way. And I'll ask for your comments too, Peter. So he kind of opens it up. I'll read the first paragraph. He opens it up with this remark. I am happy to be here and appreciate the opportunity to engage in a dialogue with you. And, of course, there's always a footnote. This is standard of any government agency. And the footnote says, I wish to thank Melissa Dickey, Kathleen Daffin, and Alejandro Rosenberg for their substantial assistance in preparing these remarks. The views expressed here are my own and do not necessarily represent the views of the Federal Trade Commission or any commissioner. And you'll see this disclaimer in any government speech. Even from a FTC commissioner, the FTC commissioner individually will say, this is my opinion. It's not necessarily, you know, the opinion or the policy of the FTC commissioners together. So they always have that little disclosure. And so he reminds, and this is, again, this is towards the DSA. This is a direct selling association meeting, and he is addressing them. And he reminds them that they issued a advance notice of proposed rulemaking back in February of 2022. That would have been, about 8 months previous. And they says, well, you got a lot of comments, 1,600 comments, which, and his comment is, which is tremendous. And he says, I can't talk to the rulemaking itself, and the review is ongoing. You know, the review of the comments is ongoing. And I'll just make a point here that he actually references later on in this presentation several individual comments that were made, and he even has the comment number identified so that if you want to, you can go to the FTC website, find that comment number, and see who made it and which MLM they were talking about, because in this speech, they suppressed the name of the MLM. They just said, you know, MLM A, B, C, D, whatever, trying not to get too personal, I guess. So, but you can find it if you want. You can find the company name. It's not that hard. So anyway, he said he wanted to address some of the comments made and issues that come up. I'll just read this one sentence. By now and for some time, MLMs should know what the law requires and how to comply with it. So, again, this is my mantra about the FTC. It's almost all talk and no action. And he has several other references to, we've been talking about this for a long time, over and over again, but he's shooting himself in the foot because he's basically admitting we're all talk. We're very little action, you know, we being the FTC. And it just kind of frustrates me reading this presentation. By the way, you can find this presentation online. It's real easy. All you have to do is Google the words FTC, DSA, October 2022, and Levine, L-E-V-I-N-E, Levine, and it'll pop up, and it's right off the FTC website. So, you know, it's the remarks that he made. There's no doubt in my mind these are, you know, true and accurate remarks. So let me just stop right there and let you make any comments at this point, Peter. I don't want to hog the whole show.
Nope, you're good to go.
Okay.
You're okay.
So his first substantial paragraph, it's entitled Steer Clear of Deceptive Earnings Claims, and the next bullet is earnings claims must be substantiated and not misleading, which is actually, you know, a good thing from the standpoint that this is a common problem with MLMs. But as I have said many times, and I said this in my comments to the FTC back in May of 2022, that I view earnings claims and product claims, for that matter, as just symptoms of a deeper problem, which the root of the whole thing is lack of retail sales. But the lack of retail sales generally comes from overpriced products. And so pushing customers aside and just thinking about the distributors buying overpriced products, well, how are you going to have anybody buy an overpriced product? Well, you have to make an earnings claim. You know, you got to do what I did to get to where I am, and this is what I did. I bought these products, period. So you have to do something just to get the distributors to buy the products, and you generally have to make some outlandish claims that go beyond reality as far as the product claims. That's really the only way you can have anybody buy these products. And so, again, I think earnings claims is important. I just don't think it's the root cause, and it's not something that is easy to enforce. And part of his letter later on, one of the comments from the citizens was getting instructed by their upline, now don't put this on social media, just talk about it privately, right? And so if the FTC can't find the claim, the inaccurate claim, how are they going to enforce it? And you know, Levine said, well, you got to do it whether it's public or private. Well, how are you going to enforce it if it's in private and you don't know about it? Now, I happen to have had a solution in my input back in May of 2022. I said you ought to do like the state of Washington did with LuLaRoe and make sure that you get a list of the distributors with their contact information so that you can contact them and ask them some questions like, are you selling many products? Are you being taught to sell products? Is that being emphasized? Are you actually selling products? And certainly a current distributor might fudge the truth a little bit, right? Because they are still involved in the business. They still think that they're going to be successful. So they may not be totally truthful, but generally an average distributor lasts a year or less. And so all you have to do is let these names and contact information age for 6 months to a year, and then you call them again, and all of a sudden they're a former distributor who's probably willing to be a little more truthful when you're asking the same questions. And so that's a good way of finding out what's really going on, even if these companies are being a lot more careful, you know, publicly and on social media with these claims. And we'll see where that goes. Interestingly, they did not use any of my comments in referencing them in this presentation. But they did present some of the ideas. So I'm happy. I'm not looking for notoriety. I just want to get the problem fixed. I just want people not to be ripped off like I was, right? I lost a lot of money, and even more importantly to me, a lot of time with my young and growing family, which I don't want that to happen to other people. And that's why I do this. So, you know, it's one of those things that is important to me, and it's going to become even a higher priority very soon, I guarantee it. Let me just move on through this document. They do reference some of the other MLMs that they have had enforcement actions against, and certainly they're going to always reference the ones they were successful with. So it is a good read, you know, and read the footnotes too, because there's some MLM company names in there. So the next bullet point is qualified earnings claims that are not substantiated violate the FTC Act. And there's several comments in here from different people stating what they were told when they were in an MLM. Allegedly, of course, you have to put that word in there. But there's a lot of comments, and they're all very consistent. So this is different people that don't know each other from different MLMs, but there's a common thread here when it comes to earnings claims and lifestyle claims. Now, here's one that's near and dear to my heart. Earnings claims must take into account participants' expenses. So I think we heard from Commissioner Phillips back in 2020, and I think it was the same meeting in the October timeframe of 2020, where he said, hey, we're looking at this overhead thing. You know, you can't just claim gross profit and that's your numbers. You have to claim, you know, how much money did it cost you to make that money? Because maybe the result mathematically is a negative number, which means you lost money. You know, even if made a little bit of money, gross profit from the MLM, to get it, guess what? You lost money. You didn't make money. And so 2 years later, we get reminded again that the FTC is aware of this, and they're serious about it, and they're talking about it, but very little action. And I don't know the timing of the Amway income disclosure that we covered last week, Peter. It may have come out before this speech, but it certainly came out after Commissioner Phillips' speech. Now, Commissioner Phillips resigned, as did the other Republican FTC commissioner, Wilson, I think was her name, because it's become extremely political. I mean, the FTC has always been kind of political because the president appoints the chairperson and two others. And then there's a total of five. So the majority the political party gets three. The minority party gets two. So there's always a clash there of philosophies. But it's gotten extremely partisan with the newest regime. And that's why both of those people just resigned. They said, look, I'm not doing anything here. You guys are just steamrolling every decision. You're moving way too fast. You're breaking our own rules, and it's just out of hand. So right now we currently have three, I'll call them three blind mice, the three Democrat commissioners, and they are way, way out there, you know, doing things that are pretty extreme and not in a good way. Even though I advocate action on MLMs, I do not you want to deny MLMs due process, you know, like the FTC did for four decades against MLMs, only to be voted down by the Supreme Court 9-0, 9-0 vote that the FTC was overdoing things with their Section 13B. And unfortunately, the FTC has felt no remorse over losing 9-0. They feel like they've been cheated, and you know, they don't obviously believe in due process, which is guaranteed by our Fifth Amendment in the Constitution. And it's really sad to think, you know, a government agency has so little disregard for the Constitution and constitutional rights. It really is a shame. So anyway, earnings claims must take into account participants' expenses. And if you remember from last week, Amway in several places in the income disclosure and many other income disclosures I've seen over the years does say this does not account for your expenses, you know, but they don't quantify it. And that's what this letter does. It says, you know, you can't just say it doesn't include expenses. You have to quantify these expenses, and you don't have to get it down to the dime. Just generally, what does it cost to produce a certain level of business in the Amway business on average? And I have never seen that in any MLM, and we'll see if this speech has any impact on that. Any comments so far there, Peter?
Nope. You're good.
Okay.
I don't want to break your conversation, so we'll talk about the FTC when you're done. So
yeah. So the next headline here in the speech is extravagant lifestyle claims and testimonials are deceptive if the net impression is misleading. And he was pretty strong on this. He pretty much said, look, you just can't do it. You know, you just can't make extravagant lifestyle claims. He even said, you know, even if you have a disclaimer, he said, I've never seen and I cannot imagine a disclaimer that would overcome an extravagant lifestyle claim. And so just don't do it was his bottom line. You know, he gave him a little bit of an out, but he said, I've just never been able to read any disclaimer that overcame the overall impression of an extravagant lifestyle claim. So, you know, it was a pretty strong warning. But again, it's talk, right? We've seen, for example, Tina.org, truthinadvertising.org, make many, many comments for several years along these lines. And to my knowledge, the FTC has not paid attention to any of them. And that's unfortunate because I think Tina does a pretty good job, the people there at Truth in Advertising. It says MLMs are liable for deceptive claims made by their participants. And this is a common thing that the anti-MLM Huns get wrong, because the FTC has actually gone after distributors and the companies, not just the company and not just the distributor. And so, you know, I just want to make that point. And probably the most recent one that illustrates that is Advocare. There were some distributors that were basically banished from MLM, and one of them, I know, you know, at some point paid some money to get out of trouble. I haven't followed the second one, but the company itself, because of the actions of their distributors, paid a $150 million fine. They went from an MLM to a direct selling company, which means, again, there's a very distinct difference between MLM and direct selling. And a lot of MLMs, in fact, the Direct Selling Association, tries to muddle the water with the difference. And it's a very stark and definite difference. In a direct selling company, there is no upline, there is no downline. Every individual is connected directly to the company, and the only money that they make are the sales of the product or services to customers. Again, because there's no downline, you can't sell the downline. Whereas in an MLM, it's a mixture of both. It's both the distributor consumption as well as customer consumption. The problem being that the customer consumption is usually very small, and that's what makes it an illegal pyramid. But it's very clear, and it has been very clear, that the FTC does hold the companies accountable for the misbehaviors of the distributors. And he just emphasized it here again, and I wish the anti-MLM huns would just get a clue and start to say the right things rather than putting out false ideas. The next paragraph, it says, claims about products, including claims that a product can treat a disease, must be substantiated. So just like, you know, the income claims, you got to substantiate your product claims. You can't just say something that's not true, particularly if it's involving, you know, things like, you know, your health diseases, you know, like it lists in here heart disease, diabetes, mental illness, and a bunch of other diseases. This is a quote from a doctor, I think, complaining about these claims that his patients were giving him. Hey, doc, I'm not following your directions because I got this MLM with this miracle product. And so a doctor made this complaint to the FTC. The next paragraph here, it says, MLMs and illegal pyramid schemes. And so here, again, the FTC is on the right track where they say, look, you got to have customers. They don't quantify it. But they do say if you have an imbalance where you've got a lot more being purchased by the distributors and little to none by customers, you're an illegal pyramid. Why they don't have a specific minimum, who knows? And hopefully they will. Again, the FTC gets it, but they get it with their talk. They don't get it with their action in most cases. You know, there's only a very small handful of MLMs they've gone after, and they keep going down this road, the FTC does, of saying, look, this is very detailed, it's very complicated, every situation is different, we have to study this thing, you know, we have to get all this insider information to make a determination, and yet they expect, you know, Joe on the street to basically make an instantaneous decision, which to me seems extremely unfair. And bottom line is the FTC is not doing their job. You know, if they don't find a way of more simply putting out good curbs along the road to tell the MLMs clearly what the requirements are in a way that anybody can understand, then they're just not doing their job. You know, that's the bottom line. So anyway, I thought he made a good speech. He could have, like I told him in May of 2022, he could have looked through the other end of whether he's using a microphone or I should say a magnifying glass or a telescope or whatever instrument turn it around and look in the other direction. And what I mean by that is they're starting to talk about overhead and cost that it takes to make the money from an MLM versus just the gross profits. But they also need to look at the issue of particularly the Amway tool scam. It's not just the money that the 99% are losing. It's the money that the top 1% and particularly the 0.1% are making and not talking about it. They're just pretending their success came from whatever the MLM is and pretending that that's where their financial success came from, and it's not if there's a tool scam. So they're not quite there yet, but they're on the right track. I just hope they start doing rather than talking more. So I'll stop there, Peter, and let you make any comments you have.
We're okay. I'm sorry about that, Scott. The dogs in the house are going nuts. They want to go outside. No, I followed everything you were saying, and my only other comments are relative to the FTC. So the FTC is run right now by a chairperson. Her name is Lena Khan, and Lena is a perfect example of what's happened in many administrations, not just the Biden administration, of they have an academic who doesn't have any practical business experience that is now the head of a department. And that shows their weaknesses. So also because she's an academic and she doesn't have any experiences and she's power hungry, as many people are, she does things that are hurtful in the industry. And I was racking my brain, Scott. There was recently a Senate hearing where they grilled her, and I don't remember what it was, but there was an independent, maybe you might be able to remember, there was an independent counselor or auditor that was assigned to review a company, and the FTC basically pressured him to give them the results that they wanted, and he wound up not wanting to do the case, if you will, and kind of wrote a report saying that this just happened, basically like, hey, the FTC wants us to be the independent counsel, but they also want us to find that this is wrong with this company and this is wrong with this company and this is wrong with this company. And I'm an independent auditor, and I feel very uncomfortable being forced to come to this conclusion if I'm supposed to be this independent counselor. And it came under the FTC and Lena Khan. And anyway, so having said that, it's just one more example of what I consider the incompetence that happens. You just saw that on the pile of stuff that you were referencing about the FTC. And I can't remember, I don't know if you remember why, or if you ever knew why, but it was a Senate hearing and Lena Khan was being grilled. So it was really something interesting to watch. But back to you, Scott. I'll let you finish.
Yeah, I think it was mainly just an overall conversation about the FTC's activities. And of course, you know, like any other political venue, the Republicans were grilling her and the Democrats were praising her. And it was one of those, you know, yep, just total con jobs, really. I mean, when you really think about it, there's no sort of fairness there. It's unfair on both sides. And I understand why both sides do it, because, you know, if the Republicans said anything complimentary, then there would be nothing said that was derogatory. So they have to play the game. They have to take the opposite side. It's just unfortunate that in the middle of all of this back and forth, the truth gets lost, right? You don't know who's saying what is accurate, and you just don't know who has an agenda, because they all have an agenda, right? They're politicians. So it's frustrating. You do find out some things, but it is frustrating. There's no doubt. Go ahead.
No, the fun thing about Lena Khan was one of the people that were poking at her basically said, you have to be a lawyer, right, to be the chairperson of the FTC? And I think the answer is yes. And the said, well, you're behind on your dues and you're not continuing your education, so you're not even qualified. So it's kind of funny that, you know, Biden or the administration needed a woman there in the administration, and that's what he got. And a lot of the FTC people are women. Not that that's a bad thing, but there's a lot of women that are part of the FTC chairperson. And the gals that left, the Republicans that left, basically said, you know, this gal making up her rules as she goes along, and she overreaches, and we're not going along with this. So, and that's pretty exemplary in the broad strokes that they're sending out letters about income claims to every company. They're sending out letters to every company about health claims, and basically putting all these companies on notice without telling them, like, if they're being investigated or what's going on. And I remember that was part of the investigation or some of the criticism that the Republicans and the Democrats should have had about the way the FTC is running their business. But that's a little bit outside the scope of this conversation. So back to you.
Yeah, and I'll just finish up this whole thing with the last couple sentences in Mr. Levine's presentation to the DSA. So at the very end he says, despite decades of active law enforcement and business education around earnings claims, compliance has remained a persistent problem in many industries. And so he kind of throws a softball at the end, because I would argue that there has not been decades of active law enforcement. You know, you can't just pick off a company every year or two. You have to be stronger than that to be able to claim active law enforcement. And the same with business education. look, it's easy. If you don't enforce it, they're going to keep getting away with it, right? That's, I mean, if I was one of these scam artists, I would say, look, I'm just going to keep doing as long as I can because they probably won't catch up with me ever. And if they do, so what? I'll have made all this money in the interim. So, and the last sentence is, I hope that my being here today will serve as another reminder that we take these issues seriously and expect stronger compliance going forward. Again, talk, not action. And here's the last sentence. I wish I was a fly on the wall after he said this last sentence, Peter. I'm happy to answer any questions you have. I wonder if they had any. and what they were and what the answers were, but we don't have that information. So there you go.
Was there
anything that you wanted to remark on for that last part or any other things you wanted to bring up tonight that you had on your...
Well, one of the things that's happening is totally unrelated to this issue with the DSA, but something that's happening in real time with the industry. And we spoke a little bit about a company called Transact Card a while back. Scott, this is on Behind MLM. So Transact Card is like a debit card with a cash back kind of rewards program theme to it, run by a gentleman named Richard Smith, who has tried this many times before. But from my side, it's like hot, meaning like there's lots of people that are joining Transact Card because the promise is you'll be able to make a certain percentage on everybody's swipe of their debit card, and you know, you'll become rich, you know, because you'll have small percentages but on thousands of transactions, and you can build a team of people, and if you get like three or four people, you're breaking even, and the dollars that you put on your debit card are doubled in something called Z-Bucks, and then you can go to the Z-Bucks shopping center and buy different products from Z-Bucks shopping center. So it's not a shopping center, but it's kind of like, you know, you're using your Z-Bucks, which are doubled the dollars that you spent, and you'll be able to go buy some really cool things from some really cool vendors at some really great prices. So this has been kind of like in the works for a while, and lots of people are getting kind of really excited about it. And then recently there's been some weird things happening, like iHub Global, which is a network marketing company, basically uploading all of their people into the Transact Card database and giving everybody the opportunity to become distributors and keeping their iHub Global genealogy intact or in order. And you'd say, well, that's kind of weird. Like, that doesn't usually happen for companies that are in good standing. Like, that's usually what happens when the companies are closing. So what's going on with iHub Global? Why would they do that? And, you know, who made these decisions? Did the iHub Global person vote on this and make this decision? Or is this just some goofy thing the company did? And then another company called Canaway did the same thing. And there's people saying, like, what the hell? Like, you know, why is this going on? And if you don't activate your Transact Card, you're going to lose your downline. And I think we might have spoken about this before, but I'm like, this is kind of goofy, this stuff. It's weird. It's kind of weird. So it just doesn't make any sense. And then just recently, and this is the part that's in real time, just recently Transact Card said that they lost their credit card processor, which means basically they said that the people that have their funds on their debit card will be able to spend them. So they didn't lose their money, but they won't be able to add more funds. So the way this Transact Card was, or is supposed to be, is you get a card, it's a debit card, and you fund it. So you link it to your bank account, and then you throw in whatever, $500, and then when you're using your debit card to buy groceries or pay your insurance bill or whatever, you're using your Transact Card, and somebody's making a little bit of money on the transactions, and you're also banking your Z-Bucks so you can go buy cool things. And these cool things are supposed to be everything from, you know, stuff you would normally buy to, like, cruises. So, and basically a great way for people to be able to save money by earning the Z-Bucks and blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. And they're supposed to be launching in November. Well, when they lost their credit card, their ability to upload things kind of happened pretty quickly. And I believe the people have not lost their funds on the card. So you still be able to draw down your debit card purchases. But basically they're, you know, it's kind of like, oh, shoot, like losing your checking account. Like, what do you do if you lose your checking account or your debit card? You can't do anything. So you're kind of like stuck and out of the business, really not a good thing. Now, there's, of course, always many sides of the story. The Transact card guys are saying, oh, that's okay. We were going to actually move to a bigger platform anyway because the amount of transactions and people we're bringing in is just way too big. And then I'm very questionable about all these things. But they're throwing out a lot of comparisons to companies that are too big for the banks and relating that to Zeek Rewards. So I'll talk about that in a second. But it looks like Transact, if they're going to make it, and I don't know enough to form any opinion or conclusion, but it's kind of like not looking so good because this is one of those big rocky things that I'll talk about generically after you comment on this. But it's certainly something that is probably going to be the beginning of the end, maybe, or the beginning of a rocky couple of months, certainly. And who knows whether they're going to be able to pull this off or not. So back to you, Scott. And I can keep talking about this. I will after I get some of your comments.
Yeah, no problem. And you had sent me an email earlier this week talking about that iHub information. And like you said, there's a brand new, as we speak, September 2nd, 2023 story on this. The headline is Transact Card Loses U.S. Banking Services. And I've been skimming the article as you were talking. And this kind of reminds me on a smaller scale, like on Passive, where they have a certain thing, you know, a certain date in mind to launch, and then they go, oops, something happened, now we got a delay. And that went on for literally years with on Passive. This is only the beginning of that process. Now, I did see part of this article. It said that your funds are available on the debit card, but you have to spend the money by the end of September. And so there is a deadline to people. They need to spend the money or else they're going to lose it is the implication. It looks like a real mess. You know, when the banks back away from you, they probably smell something that's not good. So I would have a lot of issues even thinking about, you know, joining this or putting any money into it because it just seems very squirrely to me. So I'll let you, you know, make additional comments. Go right ahead.
So some of the commenters on behind MLM have it all wrong, so I'll just kind of educate some people about a few things. Number one, let's just talk about this in general. So if you are a company and you're issuing a debit card, it's not yours. It's done by a bank. So what the bank probably did was they said, we don't feel comfortable with what's going on. We're going to stop. Like, we're going to terminate our relationship with you guys, and we're going to give you some time to get your money out of the debit cards are already there. We're just not going to let you upload anymore now. We'll let you kind of, you know, basically get your money out, and when it's done, it's done. There's that's one thing. Number two, here's another thing. They probably are going to hold the money that they just got in recently. So all those people, I think it's $495 to buy into iTransact as a distributor. And then if you just want the card, it's like $25. Let's focus on the $495 for a second. The bank might say, well, now that we're terminating this relationship, we're not going to give you the money that all these distributors just gave us. We're going to hold it in reserve, just like PayPal. So PayPal, if you've ever been part of that or if you've ever had your account shut down in a bank, they say, well, we're not going to say that you're guilty. We're just afraid of chargebacks. So what we're going to do is we're going to keep all your money for 6 months, and then we'll give it to you. Now, that creates an immediate cash flow crisis for the company. So that's a big thing. Now, they also most companies, meaning the network marketing company, offer refunds. So if you were and they've been getting massive growth just recently. So say, for instance, in the last 2 weeks, you spent your $495 and you bought your Transact card distributorship, and now all of a sudden this is going on. What will you do? Well, you'll probably ask for a refund or charge back to your credit card. So what's going to happen probably, I don't know this to be true, but what's going to happen many times is they're going to start getting a whole bunch of chargebacks, and that's going to be bad news. That means that people that earned commissions are going to be charged back their commissions. It's going to be a clusterfuck. So for lack of a better expression, this is bad news. Like, this is really hard to recover from. Can you recover from it? Yes. As a company owner myself, I remember when I was building my business, I did not know how to take a credit card. Like, I was brand new. Like, I spoke to a gal named Susan. I said, Susan, I was a business friend, and I said, how do I get a merchant account? She said, well, go to your bank and go get a merchant card, so a merchant account. So that's what I did. I went to Bank of America, which was my residential bank at the time. I had opened up a business. They asked me some questions. I gave them my stuff. I had good credit. They gave me a merchant account, and I was processing business. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was very little at the beginning because I just got started. And then I basically I did what I was supposed to do. I hit a big account. And I don't remember what the number was, so I'm going to throw out $30,000. I did $30,000. This is probably pretty close to an accurate number, but not the accurate number, but give me a little bit of flexibility here. So I did $30,000 pretty quickly, and then I got a phone call from the bank, and he says, we want to know what you do. I'll never forget. His name is Mike Campbell, or at least the old man's name was Mike Campbell. Hey, Peter, you know, I just want to welcome you aboard, and I want to know what you do. I'm like, hey, Mike, you're my banker, and I don't get phone calls from bankers, and I'm not suspecting this is a good phone call, especially when you're asking me, I just want a better understanding of what you do. And he had somebody else on the other line. And by the way, I never had a chargeback, never had any customer complaints, never nothing. So I think my business was several months old at that time. I don't remember if it was 8 or 9 months old or whatever the number was. But I said, hey, Mike, you know, so what's going on? He says, well, you know, we're kind of reviewing our contract, and we really don't do your kind of businesses, Peter. I said, what the hell are you talking about, Mike? You've been doing my business for the last 8 years. I'm sorry, for the last 8 months. And what do you mean you don't do it? He says, well, you know, whoever filled out your application did whatever. I said, I answered my question. I answered the questions of whoever asked me what I did, and this is what we do. He said, well, we really don't do this. He said, but you can continue doing business. And I said, you know, Mike, are you sure? He's like, yeah, you sure you can continue doing business? What he meant was, you can continue doing business, but we're just not going to pay you, Peter. So when I didn't get my deposit that next Monday, I called him up, and we've had this little conversation, and I said to him, Mike, I got a question for you. If every business had a record like mine, as far as no chargebacks, no customer complaints, basically I've been the perfect customer, would we even need assholes like you? Literally, would your bank even need an asshole like you to be a supervisor? He didn't like that. They held my money for 6 months, and eventually they gave me my money back, and I had to call for it because they weren't going to do it. But I didn't have any chargebacks, but I could have. And if my customers didn't know what was going on behind the scenes because I was able to kind of do the wrong thing. I had a friend that said, hey, I had a process credit card. He says, I'll do it for you for now. Like, give me a percentage off. We're not supposed to do this, Peter, but we'll do it anyway. And, you know, I'll take care of you. I know you're a good guy and you run a business. So my customers never knew that we were breaking the law. I'm telling you in advance. I did things wrong based on the merchant accounts, and so did his. But there was nothing as far as realistic things that were bad. These are the things that people don't understand when it comes to, oh, my God, Peter, you broke the terms and conditions of the merchant account of your friend. And said, well, me and my friend knew what we were doing. We did it anyway because you fucking idiots, you screwed us when you did what you did, like when Mike Campbell did what he did and shut me down. Now, by the way, that is not the scenario that probably happened with Transact Card. With Transact Card, the people probably looked at it and said, what the is going on? You had 10,000 people just join for $495. You guys are running a freaking pyramid scheme, is probably what the bank said. And there's too much risk here. We're not taking this risk. We're shutting you down. And that's probably what happened with Transact Card. Now, can they recover? I don't know. We'll see. You know, it depends on the distributor attitude, whether they're going to be able to go get another merchant account. You can always get another merchant account. Don't think you can't. The percentages are screwy, but you can always find somebody that's willing to launder your money, I'm going to say, in a less professional way. So you'll always be able to do that. So having said that, whether the Transact card is going to make it or not, I don't know. I on my radar, I predict no. So I would not be very favorable towards this. Now, that's based on what I know today. If I learn more information, I would give myself the flexibility and the freedom to change my mind. Now, here's what some of the idiots that commented on behind MLM said. Oh, that's just like Zeek Rewards. They said they lost their bank and they couldn't get another one. Well, here's the difference. And only idiots would make comments like that, and people that don't understand what was going on with Zeek Rewards would understand what I'm referencing now. Zeek Rewards never took credit cards. Zeek Rewards took certified cashier checks or bank wires. So Zeek Rewards had a problem with their bank. There was a little bank. They were in Lexington, North Carolina. Now, by the way, we're not talking about Lexington, Kentucky. We're talking about Lexington, North Carolina. I think population next to nothing. I think, there was one bank in Lexington, North Carolina. So imagine this. Now, by the way, if you're smart, and I would ask the listening audience, what are some of the most secure forms of payment for you if you're a merchant taking it? Well, one of them is not a credit card because a customer can charge that back. And depending on the bank policy, sometimes way longer than 90 days. Sometimes it could be a year, year and a half. You could still get a chargeback from a person on a credit card, especially if it was a breach of contract, was not advertised as promoted or whatever. They can get a chargeback. So credit cards aren't good. Bank wires are good, but the average customer doesn't know how to do a bank wire. One of the most secure payments is cash or cashier's check. A lot of people don't know this. Once you get a cashier's check, that is no longer your money. You can't say, well, give it back. The answer is, it's gone. It's not yours anymore. So therefore, a bank taking a deposit of a legitimate bank's cashier's check is one of the most secure, I'm speaking like a southerner, it's one of the most secure ways you can take a payment. It's actually almost as good as cash. Almost as good as cash. Zeek Rewards, how the hell do you go to a bank and say, I need to open up a bank account? And what does the person say? Oh, well, hold on one second. I'll go get a teller to help you. No, I think I need a little bit more than a teller. Oh, sure. So you're sitting down with the guy who's the bank guy sitting in the bank, and you say, hey, listen, I need to open up a bank account. Oh, what would you like? A business checking account, please. And how are you going to fund this? Oh, I have this stack full of cashier's checks. And how much is this? Oh, it's $6 million. Oh, actually, no, it's not. It's $60 million because, we've been trying to open up a bank account for the last 10 days. Well, the answer is, Scott, think it through. I mean, this is the fucking idiots that make comments about these things. How the hell, what bank are you going to be able to go to in any city with 500 cashier's checks for anywhere from $500 to $10,000 and say, I want to open up a bank account? And this is going to be like a regular occurrence? You're going to be bringing in these certified checks? Somebody's going to be looking at them and saying, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to do this. So sometimes real growth, sincere growth, is really hard to deal with in the banking industry. Here's another thing that most people never knew. As soon as Zeek Rewards opened up a bank, the federal government would call that bank and say, you better shut that down because we don't want these people to have a bank account. So the investigators basically were closing banks down that were legitimate banks that said, okay, well, we'll do it. And if certified checks, we'll hold the money. We'll hold the money for a few days just to make sure you guys aren't scamming people or that we're not having these things, blow up on us, which, by the way, they didn't, because the people happily wanted to get involved with these things. And in essence, and this is so difficult for some people to understand, if you had more money coming in than you knew what to do with, opening up a bank account is not easy. It's very hard because of all the potential fraud or the liability. It's really tough. So like the idiots on Behind MLM says, this is exactly the same as Zeek Rewards. No, it's not. You know, no, it's not. You're just complete idiots talking out of your ass most of the time, like the typical anti-MLM person who doesn't understand anything. And unfortunately, we're watching what's going on with Transact Card in real time, but it also gives me an opportunity to address some things that happened in previous companies in past time. So back to you, Scott.
Yeah, good discussion, Peter. That's good stuff. And we're getting close to the end of our time here tonight. And what would a show be if we didn't cover our favorite MLM, OneCoin? So there's a story here, August 31st, 2023. The headline is, Sebastian Greenwood's attorneys ask for time served. So this is one of the main co-founders of OneCoin, which is described as a $4 billion scam. And I know that both of us were predicting its demise back at the end of 2017, I believe it was. And it's still around. It's not nearly as big or popular as it used to be, but it's still around. I don't think there's much going on in the United States with it. But in other countries, it does appear to be functioning. So anyway, it's interesting because the lawyer's argument isn't that this guy broke a bunch of laws and, you know, was basically co-founding and co-running a massive scam, but that he was treated bad in prison. Both in Thailand and the United States, the prison conditions were so bad that the judge should just say, you're free to go, time served. Which to me is ridiculous because, you know, this judge gets convicted people all the time put in front of him for sentencing that were in these prisons. And I doubt that most of the lawyers talk about that as far as go easy on this guy. He was treated badly. Now, you look at the conditions he was in, whether it's here or in Thailand, they were terrible. And to me, the message should be, don't screw up to put yourself in a position to be put in those places in the first place. You know, it's a lesson learned for everybody else that's contemplating or doing these things. You might want to find a different line of work because these are not pleasant places. They're probably not going to change in the near term. And certainly I don't agree with the conditions in these prisons, but that's reality. And we have to function in reality. We can't have some kind of a, you know, nirvana, you know, wish list of what we wished prison was like. And actually, he was not technically in prison. He was in jail because you go to prison after you've been convicted and sentenced. But he's up for sentencing on September 12th. So what is that, 10 days from now? So in a couple shows, we'll be able to talk about what the judge sentenced this guy to. But everything that I read in this article is, you know, he was one of the lead people in OneCoin, you know, next to Ruja. And he also impregnated women around the world, literally, in different countries. And these are only the ones that were reported on. You know, there's probably others that, you know, didn't make the news that he's responsible for. So he's quite the ladies' man for sure, this Sebastian Greenwood. And we'll just have to see what happens with the sentencing. But there's your OneCoin story for the night. Yep. You know, we haven't talked about OneCoin in a little while, and it's back in the news. So any more comments on that story, Peter?
Comments about that? I was listening. I use Edge as my browser, and there's a feature on Edge. If you hit – most people that are unfamiliar with this, there's a read-aloud feature on Edge. If you click on F9, if you're on Edge on that article, it'll pull up a little thing that says read aloud, and you can hear it, read the article. So I was kind of like, there's so many things that I want to hear or read, that I got a couple of computers over here, so I was listening to that. And, man, that guy, I don't know him, so I don't know if I feel bad for him or not. But imagine I feel, like, bad for him because he was in a Thailand jail. And the stuff that he must have went through, Scott, must have been something to really mentally break you. I mean, oh, my God. The stuff that he must have lived on a daily basis. They should – I really do think that we should have reality shows about, like, life in those prisons. And I bet you we'd have less crime. Like, I know we would have less crime because people would see the real things that happen in those prisons, and they would be very major league deterrents. Because I'll share with you, most people would never want to go through what this guy has been through in his life. It sounds tragic. And regardless of what he did to victims and everything else like that, himself individually, he's been through a whole bunch of stuff. So I understand why his attorneys might say, listen, you know, this guy's on the brink of, like, going nuts. You know, can you give him a little bit of a break? And I can certainly say, I can see what the judge would say, nope. Not going to do it. You know, get another 15 years, just maybe in a better jail. Don't do that, you know. But I really do think the whole waste here would be is not to display what happened to him, because I know if I was somebody that was, like, potentially going down the wrong road, I would not do it. If I knew this was potentially the thing that could happen to me as a result of that, I don't care how many billions you throw in my bank. There's just no friggin' way. I would not want to go through the last couple of years of this guy's life, because he's never going to be the same if he's normal. So anyway, I'll let you comment on that. And then why don't you give your website at the end of your comments, and then we'll call it a show.
Yeah, there's a program out there. It's been out there for decades called Scared Straight. It's really focused towards teenagers, where they bring teenagers who've just been doing minor stuff, and unfortunately what happens in many cases is it just compounds and they do worse and worse stuff. And so they take these kids that have done minor crimes, they take them right into prisons, and they say, here, talk to these guys, you know, ask them what their experiences were when they were your age and what they were doing and how it snowballed and so forth. And in many cases, they scare them straight, right? They tell them, don't do what I did, because this will happen to you. I'm here for many years, and the conditions suck, and you need to change, you know, change your behavior. And I agree with you. I think, you know, a reality show, because reality shows are the last thing that's reality, right? All these weird reality shows, it's the opposite of reality in my mind. But this would be a great show. I agree with you, Peter. Put in these, because read the article. When you read the article, you'll see what we're talking about. It is terrible. The things he went through, I totally agree with you. But hey, you're the one that decided to behave the way you did and so forth, and you put yourself in that position. But greater awareness of the conditions in these places, and this isn't just Thailand. The United States was, I wouldn't say as bad, but pretty bad, you know, pretty close. It's one of those things that I guess a lot of these people just don't think they're ever going to get caught. That's the bottom line, I think, in my mind. They just think that they can outsmart everybody all the time. And some of them probably do. I know Dexter Yeager did. I mean, he lived and died as a scam artist. He got away with it. And many, many other people have, you know, lived and died, whether it be MLM scams or other scams. And so it is possible. But it's also possible you'll go through what this Sebastian Greenwood went through. So anyway, so my Facebook is facebook.com/ScottTexJohnson, ScottTexJohnson, all one word. I got three websites, the link to this show, my YouTube, my email, and Peter, I think next week is going to be our 8-year anniversary.
All right.
Of doing this show. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent. Okay, good. Well, we'll have a good show next week. And thanks, everyone. Have a safe and a healthy Labor Day for those people who are celebrating Labor Day. We'll catch you next time. Thanks, Scott.
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.